Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Howard Simon and Jeremy White.
This statement is humbly called, hockey games U.S. play-by-play commentators have utterly ruined.
Howard Simon.
Long ago and far away, when I was a boy, we wore hockey sweaters, not hockey jerseys. And we never sat in locker rooms, dressing rooms they were called. And we didn't have a half wall. What would that be? We had boards. And we got penalties for boarding, not half walling.
Jeremy White.
Nor did we take a wrister. What an insulting word. We took a wrist shot. Nor did we take a slapper. What an insulting word. We took a slap shot. And not the movie. And no U.S. commentator can speak about magical mittens because most of them never saw a mitten. But I have actually heard them say he loops it in like a real good dunk. These odious phrases are all momentary inventions by American play-by-play announcers who have never played or understood the game.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
I'm already fighting with people online.
Happy Dingus Day.
I'm fighting with
That's
people.
That's too early, man. It's Monday. It's 6:04.
Yeah,
what are you fighting about?
Ham. Fighting about ham.
You want the Jewish guy to chip in on this one?
Wow. My case is that ham is not an elite meat.
Oh, it's not an elite meat.
No.
I eat ham, I would say, twice a year.
Yeah. Right. It's
Once was yesterday.
Easter.
And Christmas.
Christmas.
We do turkey
maybe,
at Thanksgiving,
maybe
Christmas ham.
You do ham sandwiches with lunch meat, but
no,
ham,
I'm not a lunch meat ham guy.
Ham as a meat, it's behind
turkey, roast beef.
It's easier to ask, what's it ahead of? If there's a meat draft,
is pimento loaf? Do we figure that one out?
It's, ham goes behind seafood.
We already had a meat draft.
Where did ham go?
See
if we can get those results.
Yeah, let me see.
I mean, listen, I'm not mad about having ham yesterday for Easter dinner. I like having ham on Easter and on Christmas. But
yeah,
on the list of meats, I mean, steak, chicken, turkey, pork, venison.
Does prime rib count?
Quail, bison.
Quail?
I've never even had it. I'll put it ahead of ham. Ham's just, I'm not even saying it's the worst. It's just not elite.
So you're fighting over where ham
Well,
ranks.
You know, some people are mad. They didn't want to start their Monday being told the truth about ham.
The truth about ham. All right, now I found our hot Twitter topic of the day for the 7 o'clock hour. We had ham
Perfect.
Yesterday. Sure, we had ham. Well, I think, you know, I might add ham maybe a month or two ago. It's kind of easy to make. Ham, asparagus, and pierogies. Mmm, yum. A little hollandaise sauce on the asparagus.
Yum.
Hollandaise sauce could have leaked over onto the ham a little bit, not going to lie.
Is hollandaise sauce is general? Is that what is that? That what and what is that generally on? There's a dish that's
asparagus.
That, okay, I feel like there's another dish. Is there some
oh, really?
Sort of egg based dish that it's?
Oh, yeah, it's
What is it? Because you know I don't eat eggs.
We were just talking about this at dinner last night. What's the
Eggs Benedict?
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah, I
yeah,
got to go out and get English muffins today. My wife had a craving for Eggs Benedict last night.
I
no, she's not pregnant.
I don't eat eggs, so
Eggs Benedict.
I would have been kept away from hollandaise sauce for
mm-hmm.
a while.
Hollandaise sauce is probably a little fatty, but it's good.
How do you make it? Is it?
It's in a package. It comes in a powder package, and you just kind of put it, make it over. I don't know. You add stuff to it. And you
egg yolk, melted butter, and lemon juice.
You just buy a package of powder at the store, and you make hollandaise sauce.
That egg yolk's kind of scaring me off.
Oh well, it's good. It
hollandaise
tastes good.
Is one of the five mother sauces in French cuisine. But you didn't know that.
I'm not sure where to go with that one, quite honestly.
Apparently, there are five mother sauces.
I think we only have hollandaise sauce when we have asparagus with ham.
By the way, ham went in the fifth round of the meat draft.
Right, thank you.
Oh, so it's a day three pick.
It went behind meats like turkey,
yeah,
salmon, Italian sausage. Tuna went ahead of ham.
That's right. No, the right tuna, not the kind of can, but like if you get a tuna steak.
Yeah.
Yes, ham went in the fifth round of the meat draft. Thank you. I feel vindicated.
Mm, salmon, huh? Yeah, I guess I would say salmon over ham, maybe even tilapia.
When's the last time you went
Attic.
To a restaurant and ordered ham?
Never.
Do restaurants serve ham?
That's a good question. I've never ordered ham in a restaurant. Never.
You know? What's the special? Oh, we've got a delightful ham. That just never happens.
Now, like I said, remember, Jewish kid growing up, ham was not in the Simon house.
Fair enough.
So, married out of the faith, ham became in the Simon house.
It's not bad. It's fine. It's just not worthy of a day one, day two pick.
If you'd like to come over tonight, we have plenty of leftovers. Tonight is leftover ham with asparagus and some kind of potato.
I did find out the mother sauces of France. It's bechamel, espagnol, I think, which is espagnol. I can't even say it.
Ketchup?
No, just kidding. There's a bunch of different ones. Hollandaise is in here, though. And tomato base is another one.
It's yummy.
So, yeah, you know. Just thinking about ham over here. What else are we going to do? It's draft week, so, you know, that's exciting.
It is draft week, and yet Sabres going to name a coach this week?
I have no idea.
I was telling Jeremy, I was reading an article over the weekend from Scott Burnside at The Athletic. He did a, you know, who's left in terms of coaching candidates, because there are four teams that are still looking for a coach. I actually thought about, believe it or not, as I was watching Winnipeg get eliminated from the playoffs the other night by St. Louis, I thought about Paul Maurice. Never won a cup, but he's been in the playoffs multiple times. I got to tell you, there's nobody that's out there with that previous NHL head coaching experience that actually excites me.
You know what would have been exciting is if Jason Botterill had offered the job to the winner of the Amerks-Marlies series publicly and just said,
here's a little carrot.
Whoever wins it.
Well,
has first crack at this job.
Sheldon Keefe is has a couple legs up on that one.
But the Amerks have not played poorly, right? They've been fine. They have deserved better.
They just can't close out their chances.
And they've hit the post 100 million times.
Victor Olofsson's hit three posts in two games.
Okay,
and he's also had a number of other chances that, I mean, Friday night he didn't even register a shot on goal, and he hit two posts, and he had another couple of shots that, I mean, again, I've said, he doesn't miss by much when he shoots the puck. So, I mean, it came within inches.
Yeah. Well, whoever wins the series can have the job, or whoever loses the series. I don't think it really matters who wins it. But those two have to be two candidates, right? Chris Taylor and Sheldon Keefe.
I feel more excited about going through the Burnside list was more about, you know, the guys that aren't. It's the assistant coaches. It's the guys in college. He brought up Rickard Gromberg, who coaches the Swedish national team. The guys who've been NHL head coaches before, just nothing got to me. So as much as I think we read into the McClellan story that Botterill is thinking of hiring a guy who's been a head coach before, I don't know that he is, that he isn't. I guess it'd be nice to have it because Housley bombed out. But the guy before him had previous head coaching experience, and he bombed out. There's just nobody that excites me. And the guy, go get somebody new. Gronberg, fine. You know what we don't talk about? Do we talk about NHL coaching trees? Is that a thing like NFL coaching trees are?
No.
Right?
It's not.
Because I was reading about Lane Lambert, and he's been with Barry Trotz on the island and in Washington, and I was thinking, we never talk about NHL coaching trees. It doesn't seem to be a factor.
I mean, is Phil Housley part of Peter Laviolette's coaching tree, or did he just hire him as an assistant?
Yeah, so it's not really a thing. But I thought, you know, if Trotz is that good, what about Lane Lambert?
The Sabres staff, Steve Smith and Davis Payne.
Chris Height.
Davis Payne has been a head coach before. Mm-hmm. And whose tree did he come off of? I don't know. So I just think about, is that who I'm thinking of, right? Davis Payne?
No.
Who's the guy that's been on the Sabres staff? Davis Payne.
It's too early on a Monday.
Andrew Allen, he's the goaltender
coach. I don't think it was somebody else.
Steve Smith.
Chris Height. We're missing somebody, boys.
I don't know who it is. It's not important. Davis
Payne. Is he still here?
Yeah, he is. He was hired on July 5th, 2017.
Is he still listed here? I'm just trying to see if any of the
coaches are actually
still listed.
He was a guy that was supposed to maybe get fired.
Yeah, the three guys are still listed. Davis Payne, Steve Smith, Chris Height, and Tom Ward.
Well, there you go.
Andrew Allen. Yeah, so I was thinking about that too, that maybe you'd look for a coaching tree thing, and Lane Lambert or Dean Evason, he's Boudreaux's assistant in Minnesota. At this point, there's, like I said, the Mike Yos and the Dave Tippett's and the whatever else is out there, the Mark Crawford's of the world, just none of those guys excite me.
Well, it was 8 years ago yesterday, Easter, that the Sabres were in the same spot that the Vegas Knights were in yesterday, that the Leafs were in yesterday.
The closeout game
at home, in overtime, up 3-2, and lose. 8 years ago.
Yeah, I don't remember. I read your article,
Can you believe it?
It's a long time.
Can you believe that was the last playoff game in Buffalo? And the last guy to score a goal in a playoff game in Buffalo was Ville Leino. just all of the gut punches at once to think about what that meant.
Of course, he was wearing the sweater of the other team that day.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
He scored against the Sabres, and then they signed him, and then he never scored for them. He went a full season without scoring a single goal.
Yeah.
8 years ago.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Easter Sunday, 8 years ago. I think about that all the time.
I do flashback, not necessarily as much about the date, but you just flash back to just the playoff experience. You know, I mean, I'm watching the Bruins Leafs yesterday, and Toronto scores early in the third period. I forget when, but, you know, within the first few minutes.
Matthews to get it to 3-2.
3-2. And immediately I thought what that used to be like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, on either side, whether you were, think about what it was like when the Sabres would have been in the Bruins' position, where you need this game to continue your season, and it's 3-2, and there's still like 16 minutes left. You're like, oh my God, this is going to take forever. We can't hold on to a one-goal lead for the next 16 minutes. This is crazy. And then you're the other team chasing. You're like, come on, just a shot from the point bounces in off a guy's hip. Anything, come on, we got. And the stress
when you're
of a one-goal game in the third period and an elimination game in the playoffs. And I thought, man, remember that stuff? Do people remember those games?
If you're up one goal, 10 minutes is forever.
Forever.
And if you're down one goal, 10 minutes is there's almost no time left.
Right. Do we pull the goalie yet? So I did. I every now and then you slip into those moments where you think, you know, you watch the elimination games and the handshake line and you think, you know, I mean, it's been forever since the Sabres won a playoff series around here. But I do from time to time. I'm not saying I like wallow in self-pity, but I sit there in the third period and I think, man, I miss those days. As stressful as they were, edge of the seat, hunker down in the basement, wife, son, don't talk to me for the next 3 hours. I miss those days. Like, you just want to be a part of that again. You feel like you're in a different league. Like, you're not in the same, you know, you're in a relegation division where playoffs aren't allowed or something like that. You just you don't feel like you belong. Until you get back in the postseason.
Yeah, I feel like I belong, but I'm being kept out by bad decisions. And that's what's even more frustrating. It's not bad luck. Well, it's some bad luck. They've had some bad luck, but it's bad decisions. I think about the Sabres. This is my article at the website. And it's Bills draft week, so we got plenty of Bills draft coming up. But I wrote an article. It's up on our website. And it's funny. I got a lot of response from people that said they feel the same way, which is I am always thinking about the Sabres. And I'm... not really exaggerating that much. I wrote in the piece that when I'm anywhere or driving to Easter dinner last night, and my wife will say, like, what are you thinking about? My answer is, like, I'm thinking about the Sabres.
Really? You're on the plane.
I am all
flying over Nebraska on your way out to Vegas.
Thinking about
and
the
Sabres. She turns to you and says, what are you thinking about? And you're thinking, and you say, offer sheets?
Yes.
Okay, I need to get you some help.
I'm thinking about the Sabres
all
the time. It's awful. It's terrible.
I'm not going to lie. I don't want to think about
because
all the time because it would make me crazy.
There are times where, you know, right now they don't have a coach and they don't have anybody rumored to be up. And some people would say, why don't you just ignore them for a while? Just let them do their thing.
Yeah, right.
Call me when you're good.
Go read your NFL draft books.
I can't do
it. Go look at TJ Hawkinson clips.
That I can do, but I can't. I just can't turn it off when it comes to the Sabres. I can't say, you know what? I'll think about them when they deserve my thoughts. Nope.
Yeah.
I'm there all the time. I'm watching Ryan O'Reilly get nominated for the Selke Trophy, and I'm thinking about the Sabres. Robin Leonard's up for the Vezina.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to win it, but I'm thinking about the Sabres, right? I'm watching as Evander Kane's in the playoffs, whether it's Ennis playing for the Leafs or Beaulieu, or it's not even about I want all those guys back. It's just,
hey, man, Dmitry Kulikov played for Winnipeg.
Did he? There you go. Yeah. I'm thinking about yesterday. I thought about Jamie McGinn and how... You know, I just go down a rabbit hole and I'll think, you know, I really did want them to re-sign McGinn. He was only like $3 million, and he's a nice guy that could go up and down your top three line. And I'm just, it's terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know when I can shut it off. Maybe when the hockey playoffs end. Maybe not. Maybe when the Bills.
No, I don't think it'll be when the playoffs
end. The Bills get to minicamp, maybe, when I can actually see some Josh Allen highlights. Because, you know, all you get from the football team right now is scouting reports and everybody down there telling you everything's going great, which is how it works this time of year for every football team, right? Everything's great. Oh, my God, we love each other. It's going to be awesome. Training camp, I'll get a chance to look at Josh Allen with Cole Beasley and John Brown and whoever they draft. But in the absence of any sort of on-field thing, I just kind of drift right back to, man, what if Jack Eichel and Austin Matthews switched spots? What would be different about our lives? And the answer to me is probably not much.
Yeah.
So I just think about them all the time.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, with football, honestly, you know what you need? You need like actual, whatever phase it is where coaches, players, footballs could all be on the field at the same time. And a quarterback can actually throw to a receiver who has a defensive back in the area. I mean, you need actual real football and real reps to actually get excited about that stuff. So in the meantime, yeah, I don't think about it all the time like you. I mean, there are times, you know, when I think about if a team's being eliminated, I hear your voice in my head going, let's pick apart the roster of the Calgary Flames. And, you know, maybe they want to get rid of Johnny Gaudreau. I do think about that. I think about the coach search. But honestly, it's funny. You said when the playoffs are over, I can't wait for the playoffs to end because it means we're getting that much closer to the draft, free agency, and roster surgery.
I told you, the playoffs, what else do they mean to me? Watching a game and hearing an announcer say, look at this crowd, and me thinking, shut up. Like, I'm not impressed. I just sit there and
or watch. Even the crowds outside, like in Toronto and Winnipeg. Oh, cool. Showing the streets.
Look at the party in the plaza. Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah. You like hockey, too. I know. I end up being bitter. And it's not good.
No, it isn't good. For the most part, I have not. I'm proud of myself. I can be bitter too, but I haven't been during the postseason. I've been able to kind of step back. I guess jealous would be the word. Yeah, I wouldn't use bitter. It's more of a like, you know, the old When Harry Met Sally. I want what she's having. You know, I want that again. Right? They show, hey, Winnipeg's playing a home game, and they take a peek outside, and you just see. Like a long line of a mass of human bodies outside, and they whatever did, they call it in Leafs, Leafs did, Park
they
or whatever.
They did lose every home game.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, how about that? They've lost six straight playoff home games.
And Calgary went out in the first round. Yep. And Tampa went out in the first round.
First stat of the day. You want your early stat of the day? Hang on, wait for it. Can't be stat of the day without special effects. First time in NHL history that the 2-1 seeds went out in the first round of the playoffs. Never happened before. Going back to when the original six became 12, the expansion in 68. Ooh. Since they went to conferences, this has never happened before.
I was going to say, when they were original six, did four make the playoffs?
Four of six made it.
And did the top two seeds go out then?
That's a good question.
I would imagine that had to happen at some point.
But by the way, which is why like Montreal has 4,057 cups, right? Because there were only six teams and four. You won a series and boom, you're in the final. So yeah, first time in the whatever, post-expansion era. That the top seeds both went out in the first round of the playoffs. There's your early stat of the day.
All right.
Brought to you by...
Maybe part of my problem with the Sabres and how they're on my mind is that Toronto-Boston, there's no one I'm happy for.
Yeah, I know. I
I'm just happy that nobody won the series yet. The Bruins win yesterday, and it's good. Nobody won it yet.
Marchand scores into the empty net. I went, yes! And then I went, oh, I got to go shower. I mean, this is just not a fun place to be, and I just felt so, ugh, bleh.
It's terrible.
It's rooting for bad guys, and yet I got it, you know, I did not want to see Toronto win, and I will root for Boston tomorrow night, and then with all my might, I will root for the Bruins to lose.
Ryan O'Reilly is going to be out there to deal with.
Yeah.
So is Robin Leonard.
Yeah.
Do you have a feeling about either one of them? I wrote about this.
I liked what you wrote about the O'Reilly trade. You're right about the Leonard deal. Nobody here wanted him back.
Nobody in the league wanted him.
Right.
It's worth pointing out that the Islanders got Leonard. By the way, their backup goaltender, Thomas Greiss, is a save percentage very close to Leonard.
Right. And didn't they almost go 50-50 in games this year?
Which would indicate it's a big
system.
I mean, he's having a great year. That's fine. But Jason Botterill gave Robin Leonard a one-year contract. At $4 million, he played below goals saved above average. His save percentage was sub 910. He was having personal problems.
Right.
Like, there was so much about why you would not bring that guy back.
Right.
He goes out and has to rebuild his career on a $1.5 million contract, has a great year. The idea that you should have...
And good for him that he's got his life together and everything's okay.
Sure. The quote from him in the offseason was he's never had a sober season of hockey.
Right.
So now he is. Good for him. You know, the Sabres absolutely have to eat it on Ryan O'Reilly, but on Robin Leonard, not at all. I've got zero criticism, zero problem with letting Robin Leonard walk. I'm still more upset about the fact that they even traded for him ever. Consider that he was – how proven was he when they traded a first for him?
Right.
And then the Islanders get him for 1.5 and nothing.
Yeah.
Islanders in that scenario. Don't be the Sabres.
What Saber fan wanted him re-signed? Saber fans were annoyed with how he had played. He was part of the overall issues the team was having. The O'Reilly thing to me is the legitimate discussion because nobody wanted Leonard back. Leonard became a joke around here. Leonard became like his inability to literally make a save in shootouts became like the poster child for the Sabres' failures. So I don't think about him at all. The only time I think about him is, why did you give up a first-round pick for that guy, Tim Murray? But I don't think anybody is sitting there going, stupid Sabres, why didn't we re-sign Leonard? The O'Reilly trade, that's a different story.
Yep.
And I know, I think your point in the article is an interesting one. Sure, we don't know exactly what the return is since there's still, you know, futures involved.
But it's almost impossible to win.
It would be so hard to beat what O'Reilly's done in St. Louis. Right. He goes to the Blues. You know, he has a career year in terms of points. He still does what he does on faceoffs, right? He led the league in faceoffs taken and faceoffs won.
I mean, he's up for the Selke.
But he even topped his, you know, his typical 55-point production.
He's up to like 70s.
Yeah. I mean, he had a career best season. They are one of the great stories of the league. Last overall on January 1st, and now they're in the second round.
Fired their coach.
So the O'Reilly thing to me, Leonard is not a factor. There were people who said, why are we getting rid of Ryan O'Reilly? Nobody called or texted or emailed or tweeted us and said, guys, why didn't we re-sign Robin Leonard?
And
it was just not a thought.
It's worth asking, would Leonard have even signed here for that money, or did he want to also move on because it was a bad situation?
Well, I mean, he did say he hated playing here.
And he thanked the organization for its support. Yeah, but Leonard, the other thing about Leonard, oh, he was criticized because of that trade. Do not agree. I do not agree. I think Tim Murray was criticized for that trade. Leonard was criticized for his play, which often was not that good.
Right.
And the shootout thing drew, you know, kind of hammered that home even more. But any idea that Robin Leonard was A, run out of town, or B, overly criticized, I don't agree with either one of them. The team was consistently criticized for being awful.
Yeah.
And Leonard was the guy that was the goalie.
Right.
But it wasn't like he's the guy that's the reason we're bad.
Right.
It was, all right, $4 million. There's nothing that has shown that he's going to be anything of significance.
Yeah.
He can go. We'll get somebody else. And he's had a great year, and good for him.
Yeah, no, the O'Reilly trade, I mean, I rooted for Winnipeg, but, and I'm not going to lie, part of it is, yeah, okay, there I'm bitter. Okay, yeah, I found where I'm bitter. I rooted for Winnipeg. I don't really need to hear about O'Reilly having a great season and the Blues winning and moving on in the playoffs. That, to me, is the bigger issue because, well, there's so many levels to that discussion, not to go over old ground, but you know, if O'Reilly's, I mean, the return on it is absolutely nothing. You know, Berglund leaves. Sabocha does nothing.
You can't wait for him to be gone.
He ends up going, however, what was it, 2 months without a goal, whatever it was. Thompson stays here too long and then goes down to the minors, and you're waiting on the future draft pick.
Well, so, the future draft pick, you can effectively, if you want to, you can just say that is with Gooley. Montour.
Oh, in Anaheim, that's
because
right.
You don't know where that pick's going to end up. It's going to be jumping around with the Sharks pick. Just having that third pick maybe greased the wheels for you to get Brandon Montour.
And while that's a nice pickup, it doesn't equate a top two center.
No, you tossed in Brendan Gooley in that deal. Right. So, right, the O'Reilly deal, you know, you can say it's going to be 3 years, and maybe O'Reilly fizzles out next year. I wouldn't bet on that. He's a veteran
of the
league.
He's been consistent.
He's been consistent his whole career. You know, like the O'Reilly deal is probably a loss no matter what happens from here. You traded away a Selke Trophy finalist and wait until he wins it, which he very well might.
Well, if O'Reilly's still here, you would have had a much better shot at two scoring lines this year. And then Mittelstadt doesn't have to get number 2 minutes when Berglund leaves. Mittelstadt can develop one of the bottom two lines, and you don't have to rely on him as much to help the offense with Sherry and whoever the other winger was. If O'Reilly's here, you would have had better offense.
I would also say it's also possible if you wanted to trade O'Reilly and you told your friends, no, they should. You didn't trade for the return that they got. The Sabres did.
Right.
That's what Jason Bottrell did. So it's possible to kind of live in that world where you think trading him was the right idea because of something that was going on here, but you took the wrong trade. You took the wrong return in that deal.
803-0550. You can talk hockey with us this morning. It is draft week. We've got a lot of ground to cover. Getting ready for the NFL draft, of course, Thursday night, and we will have coverage Thursday, Friday, and Saturday here on WGR. We will be speaking with our very own Sal Capaccio, who has an article up at WGR550.com about options for the Bills, trading up, trading down, staying where they are. We'll be talking about the draft all week. Also, around 9:30 this morning, Charlie Potter is going to join us. He covers Alabama football for 24/7 Sports. The Bills could take any one of a number of Alabama Crimson Tide players. Jonah Williams, first-round pick, Quinnen Williams could be there. Irv Smith Jr. in the tight end discussion. Even two running backs from Alabama are considered good prospects in this draft. So we're going to talk about the Bama guys. You know, Brian Daboll certainly knows these guys from his time on Nick Saban's staff. That's coming up as well. Paul was in Rochester yesterday for the Amherst game. He's going to join us at 7:30. You can join us at any time in the show, 803-0550 or 888-550-2550. Happy Dingus to everybody. Thanks for joining us on WGR.
I give Jason Botterill management there a ton of credit. There's no rush. No rush whatsoever. They want to make sure that they take a look at all of the interested candidates. And I think one thing that they've determined is they need a coach that has head coaching experience.
That is Darren Dreger on with the Instigators for his weekly hit with them on Jason Botterill and the Sabres coaching search, which hasn't turned up any new names of late. Richard Ronberg, maybe his name was tossed out in a piece from Pierre LeBrun once McClellan decided to go elsewhere. Anyway, tonight in the NHL, Capitals and Stars each up 3-2. They can advance. They can do what two teams did not do last night. Toronto up 3-2 in the series, lost at home to Boston. And Martin Jones, 58 saves. That's like Robin Leonard being a Vezina finalist. What? Who saw that coming? 58 saves for Martin Jones to force Game 7 between the Sharks and the Vegas Golden Knights. So those two series are on their way to a Game 7. Gordon Hayward, 20 points. Celtics get a sweep for the first time since 2011. Kevin Durant and the Warriors win. They're up 3-1. Raptors 3-1. Blazers 3-1. Aaron Judge on the injured list. Got a good stat on him coming up a little bit. He's going to be out for a while. Several weeks before they can even estimate when he'll return. Who knew an oblique was so important? CT Pan.
The NHL playoff scoreboard brought to you by Fiegel and Carr, your border attorneys. The headlines brought to you by Noom. Have you tried almost everything to lose weight? Noom is a totally different personalized weight loss program that uses psychology and small goals to change your habits so that you can lose the weight and keep it off for good. Learn more at Noom.com. That is N-O-O-M, Noom.com. 803-0550 to join us this morning, 888-552-550. We opened up with a little hockey, but it is draft week, so we're going to be talking to you all week about what you want the Bills to do, what position. We'll be talking about different guys to take, trading up, trading down. Sal's article addresses that at WGR550.com, so lots of football coming up in our discussions this week, and we look forward to talking about it with you this morning here on WGR.
I'm ready for the Arizona Cardinals' number one pick drama to be over, mainly because it doesn't feel all that dramatic. It just seems to me like the league and, well, I don't say ESPN, but they're trying to really drum up this controversy about whether or not they're going to trade Rosen or draft Kyler Murray, and I'm excited for it to eventually be well done.
And, actually see what's going to happen on the board and how that affects the Bills.
How about the story about the Raiders sending their scouts home?
Yeah, I saw that. That's pretty funny.
They're being made fun of for that. Right?
Yeah.
They're doing it because they are afraid of leaks. But, all right, allow me to play devil's advocate. Although I'm not even really doing that. It's an honest question. If your board's finished, what do you need your scouts for this week?
Right.
Your board's done.
Right. So why are they there?
These teams often talk about their board like it is, you know, sacred. It's something they always go by. You go by the board. And you'll hear NFL analysts say, if team doesn't have its board done by now, they're way behind. So Mike Mayock, John Gruden, they've got their board finished, and they say, gentlemen, ladies, whoever's
go
in the
home,
have a good time. Go home.
I guess the only thing you'd worry about now is, are you making a trade? And they don't need the scouts for that. That would be Mayock and Gruden trying to figure out
what
to do.
That's what I mean. Ownership. You decide we're going to remove other voices from this room, other sets of ears. You know, the Raiders can do anything and be called dysfunctional, and I understand why. They've kind of earned that a little bit. But sending the scouts home, I just don't know how it affects it. If they sent the scouts home in October, I'd have an issue. But the week before the draft, what are they needed for?
I think one of the things they also talked about was I think they're talking about a possible house cleaning coming up in Oakland. So a number of these scouts might be gone after the draft. So I think one of the reasons, perhaps one of the reasons why they sent the scouts home, in addition to the obvious of, hey, your work is done, is if some of these guys think they're going to be fired after the draft – Maybe they'd be worried about these guys leaking stuff out if they're not going to be there. Who knows? Well, the other, there was a funny story, too, I saw about from Mike Mayock's daughter. So Mike's now the GM of the Raiders, right?
Oh, yeah.
Did you see the one about the scouting binder?
Yes.
So he and his daughter out at dinner, and he's got his binder. It's got all the draft information, everything from all the scouts and all that. He gets up to go to the bathroom. He takes the book with him. And her point is, hey, scouts, don't take it personally. Yeah. He wouldn't even trust his own daughter at the table with his draft book. He took it with him to the bathroom. So, right. You know, you get to this point.
You're protective.
Sure, it's protective. It's paranoid, whatever you want to call it. It's proprietary information. You don't want it. You don't want anybody getting their hands on it.
Daniel Jeremiah from, what's he do, NFL?
NFL Network.
NFL Network. He responded to this story. When I started scouting in 2003, most teams allowed scouts and coaches to see the draft board. By 2012, most teams only allowed 3 to 4 people to have access to that board. This isn't that unusual.
Okay.
Right.
I was surprised. I thought it would be standard that the scouts would just see everything when all said and done.
Or at least see enough of it.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to hear Daniel Jeremiah. You know, it's how it works. The Bills have been a victim of this. When the Bills do something, when the Raiders do something, when the Browns do something, there's the knee-jerk reaction of make fun of them, right? The Patriots do this. Like, I'll tell you, that's why Belichick is smart.
Well,
he sends those guys home, and he keeps his secrets. Bill the genius. You know, the benefit of the doubt isn't there for teams like the Bills and the Raiders just yet. And the Raiders doing this, it's a funny story, but it's not that unusual.
Well, they've earned it, unfortunately. You know, maybe the Browns are changing things now, but those organizations have earned whatever shots are taken at them because of the repeated failures over the years. So I thought it was odd only because I guess I would have, I don't know, I guess, you know, if their work is done, what's the point? But I thought it was odd. And when Daniel Jeremiah said this happens more often than not, I thought, all right, fine. They're, like I said, maybe these guys are worried that they're going to be fired and Mayock and Gruden are thinking maybe they'll leak something out. Who knows? Whatever. Let's just get to the draft. It's really odd going into a draft and not even thinking about quarterback. I'm not talking about just last year when we eat and breathe and
No, because every year
we've talked about quarterback every year. Just yet, last year was like to the nth degree.
Last year it was clear they were going to do it. Every year before that, we would say
we talked about it.
They should probably consider this.
And we still watched guys, right? Even two years ago, we were still watching quarterbacks, even though we weren't. You know, we didn't think they were going to take one. Didn't know. Last year, like I said, was different. I can't tell you the last time that I didn't even think about quarterback at all during an entire college football season.
I'll tell
and
you,
a draft
the answer is. Probably it would have been the year after they drafted Lossman, and that's because they didn't have a first round pick the next year.
Yeah,
so you wouldn't have thought about it. The year after EJ, it's the 2014 class. I guess 2014 is the last year we didn't think about quarterbacks. Right.
And then you watched EJ play, and you realized we better think about quarterback.
Well, I mean, he played well enough in his first year. He didn't have. I mean, how much different was Manuel's first season from Allen's first season? Do you have any idea?
No. Statistically, no. I have no idea.
I mean, Manuel, of course, didn't run as much. He also got hurt. In his first season, let's pull the numbers up here. All right, in EJ's first season, he had 11 touchdowns in 10 games. I mean, Josh Allen had 10.
Much. Right.
Pull up Allen altogether here because they might actually be a lot closer than you think from a passing standpoint. The running, though, of course, is a very big difference. Mm-hmm. Manuel showed to be a little bit mobile, but not great. He was decent.
Neither guy would have had a great completion percentage.
No, and in fact, Manuel was told stop running and go out of bounds because he got hurt doing it.
Yeah.
But EJ throws for 1,900 yards in 10 games, and Allen throws for 2,000 yards in 11 games. Starts. Right. You know, they had about the same yards per game.
Yeah.
172 to, well, EJ's was 197. QBR, all that stuff. Allen's was a bit better there because of what he did on the ground. But through the air, about net yards per attempt, Manuel is slightly better. Average net yard, adjusted net yards, Manuel, better.
Really? Hmm. Okay.
But you knew that weren't going to take a guy because there was enough there to say, let's see where it goes in year two.
Well, even after we were... You know, after four games and a benching, I was still trying to figure out what the heck EJ Manuel can do and whether or not he should have had more time. So that to me, that's one of the stories of this draft. The fact that, you know, all this talk about Kyler Murray and Daniel Jones and Drew Locke. Don't ask me about any of the quarterbacks. Like I said, I didn't watch college football this year to watch quarterbacks. And this entire offseason, last year's offseason, we were constantly getting guests on the show to talk about all the quarterbacks. I don't know. You can go back and listen to every draft guest we've had on the show. I think the only quarterback we would have brought up would have been Tyree Jackson, just to get, you know, see what these guys thought of him because he was from UB. So that's one, to me, that's one of the interesting storylines of this year. Just not even thinking about quarterbacks. The only time we bring up quarterbacks is, how does this impact the Bills at 9? How many quarterbacks are going off the board? Is Brandon Bean going to get phone calls from teams that are behind the Bills that want to trade up to 9 to take a quarterback? Is there, you know, is that going to impact? Is there a trickle-down effect? You know, if there's a run on quarterbacks in the top 8, who's there at 9 that maybe wasn't supposed to be there? That's the way we think about quarterbacks with this draft, how it impacts the Bills at 9 and whether they would trade out.
And whether they can move down as a result.
Right, right, and get more picks. 803-0550 to join us this morning, 888-552-550. We have coverage of the NFL draft later this week. We'll be talking about it all week. And then Thursday is round one. So right here on WGR, our coverage will include Murph and Steve Tasker anchoring round one coverage Thursday night at 8. After round one, Nate Geary will be by to take your phone calls. Rounds two and three are on Friday. And starting at 7 o'clock, it'll be Nate Geary and Joe DiBiase on our draft coverage. Saturday is rounds 4 through 7. Nate and Joe will be back again beginning at 11 a.m. on Saturday for day 3 of the NFL draft. That's all coming up. NFL draft coverage on WGR presented by Fiegelin Carr, your border attorneys, and brought to you by Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women, and by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case.
Baseball take for
the season. He was unbelievable. He stopped, you know, 60 shots, and he helped us really. You know, it was actually his game. You know, we can just thank him because he was really good and just give us all chances. And with a little, you know, lucky goal, we somehow get it. And for sure, super exciting moment. But we now we want to finish it this the game 7 because, you know, that's why we playing playoff for this game. It's, you know, most fun games in NHL you can play. So I can favor.
That's Thomas Hertl. He scored the game-winning goal against the Vegas Golden Knights. Marc-Andre Fleury in the wants that one back category.
Oh, that was a bad goal.
Yeah.
I was fast asleep. And so I read that he scored shorthand, and I thought, all right, it must have been like a breakaway, a turnover, something like that.
It kind of was a partial break, not much of one.
But he shoots from like the turnover. Face-off circle.
Yeah, it should have been stopped.
Yeah, yep. I mean, that was kind of far out. So I was like, wow, he scored on that play?
Yep.
I'm watching the play going, he's going to go to the net, right? And he stops and shoots, and I thought, really, that's a bad goal for Marc-Andre Fleury.
So I have a baseball take for you. Quick thing, you had your stat of the day already. I was watching, I had an eye on the Yankee game over the weekend. Yankees playing the Royals, mm-hmm. right? So Aaron Judge is up, maybe it must be his first at bat. And here's a good example of how new age stats incorporated into a broadcast when done right are cool. It's a stat I had not seen often or not before. Maybe the Yankees have it up there consistently. The stat was that Aaron Judge, his hard hit percentage mm-hmm. is 75%. You know what that means, the hard hit percentage?
How many times the ball is hit hard?
Yes. Okay. It's how many times a hit comes from Aaron Judge with an exit velocity is 95 miles an hour or higher.
I got to look that up for Pete Alonso from the Mets.
There you
He's
go.
Have a good one.
Right. So they put on the screen, Aaron Judge, 75% hard hit percentage. Mm-hmm. The league average is 37%. So he hits the ball hard
right.
twice as often as anybody in as the league average, I should say. And then he mashed a homer on like the third pitch.
Yeah.
So it was kind of cool. Hey, look at this. Oh, Aaron Judge hits the ball hard. Yeah. That sounds about right. Wow, the league average is 37%, and there's a homer that exited at 95 miles per hour plus easily.
Yeah, I gotta figure out where I would find that stat would be. I'll look it up. Yeah, since you're bringing up a baseball take, look, everybody knows I don't like the Yankees, but holy smokes, I wouldn't wish these kinds of injuries on anybody. This is ridiculous. They had I saw a note over the weekend. I think they're down a player at every single position except second base. Somebody's gotten hurt at every position on the field, including starting pitchers and bullpen guys, right? Betances is out. Severino's out. I think second base is the only spot where the Yankees are completely healthy. This is incredible. They got 13 guys on the injured list. Isn't the roster, 25? 25-man roster? 26-man roster? So basically half the roster is on the injured list right now. And it's in, I've never seen a run of injuries. This many injuries to, you know, we're not talking like bench guys and just middle relievers. We're talking about key players throughout the lineup, in the rotation, in the bullpen. I've never seen a run of injuries like this. I wouldn't wish this on anybody, even with my despise of the pinstripes. It's incredible. And just to not to make Yankee fans worry too much, but I think the Red Sox may be getting their game together. They just swept the Rays over the weekend, so we'll see how things go from there. 803-0550 to join us. Sal's coming up at 8. Trade up, trade down, stay where they are. I put out put up the web poll, WGR550.com. What you want the Bills to do in round one? That's one of the many things we'll be talking about this week. Do you have any strong feeling anyway about trading up, trading down?
Well, the smart thing to do is to trade down.
Yep.
No matter what. And no, I think it's very hard to say until you see who's available. And when you're at 9, at what spot does a player, oh my God, he's still there? Is Quinnen Williams at 7 an oh my God scenario?
I was wondering if Quinnen Williams at 4 is an oh my God scenario.
Right. The last time the Bills did that, it was Sammy Watkins. They moved from 9 to 4.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't mean to just – I didn't mean to equate it with moving up for Sammy.
It was 9 to 4.
Yeah.
So it'll be hard to come out upset with what they do in the draft. Trading a first-round pick to move up 4 spots would be one of the things that would make me upset.
Yeah.
Right? The Watkins trade would be not cool.
No.
I don't know where you're going to finish next year. I know that expectations are higher, but – they're over-under is 6, and there's a chance they could be picking in the top 10 again if the offense struggles, if they have some injuries on defense. This is not a team that should be expecting to pick in the 20s. And, you know, that was one of the reasons that they didn't want to get rid of the first-rounder this year, was to move up for Josh Allen or for Tremaine Edmonds. So I would still operate from a standpoint of protecting next year's first. It's off the table for me.
You know what? It's odd. Maybe this is going to sound crazy. For me, the whole trading up discussion isn't as much about next year's one as it is about what else you're giving up this year. You have one second-round pick, 40th overall. You have one third-round pick, 74th overall. And I think they're going to address – I think with the first pick, they're going to go up front, whether it's offensive line or defensive line. I think they will use it up front. I don't think it'll be a receiver. I don't think it'll be a tight end. And I think one of the reasons why – is the depth at tight end, the depth at wide receiver. There should be guys available at both of those positions, which are still positions of need in round 2 and round 3. So as much as, you know, you might be thinking about don't give up next year's one, I keep thinking about don't give up a 2 or 3 this year. You still have to address skill positions in this draft. And if you give up one or both of those picks, now what are you doing? I mean, you still have to get more weapons for Josh Allen. Tight end, I think, is a big need, even with, you know, bringing in Tyler Kroft. Jake Fisher's a converted offensive lineman. Good luck with that. Jason Kroom, you see some flashes, but I'm not here to tell you I can rely on Jason Kroom to be a really tremendous tight end. And of course, wide receiver, you can still bring in another talent. So I don't think about, to me, if the trading up discussion, I don't think Bean would do it, because I think they have other needs they need to address on day 2 of the draft.
I think he would do it because he's done it a lot.
I would tell him not to. I would tell him not to do that.
He did it twice last year.
Yeah, for Edmonds and Allen. I would not do it. I would hold on to my other picks.
Since he wasn't here for the draft before, McDermott has done it multiple times. Well, Dawkins.
He went down, though,
Zay
too.
Jones. Sure, the first one they went down. Yeah, but then they went up. Then they went up twice.
Right. I would hold on. I would just sit at 9. If you're going to move out and trade down, fine, but I would not give up anything else. You have to address other positions on offense, on skill position players here to help Josh Allen this season. 803-0550 to join us. 888-550-2550 here on WGR.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly.